Welcome to Buzzed with Brian. I am your host, Brian. We're going to talk about beer, the history, and drinking. Hey there, beer fans. Welcome back to another episode of Buzzed with Brian. Thanks for tuning in this week and every week. So happy to have you all here. I'm up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I'm actually at Badger State Brewing Company. Just got done with Pour Another Round's second annual Outdoor Winter Beer Festival. I'm at Badger State, but I'm here with the owner and the brewer of Anapi Brewing Company. They started in Algoma. They have a second location now in Suamico, just north of Green Bay. And Nick Calloway, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me. That's awesome.
Cheers, yeah. I know we just both spent the last few hours sitting outside in the cold. It is an outdoor winter beer festival, even though there wasn't snow. It was still cold today, so
a little chilly.
Happy to be inside, warm up a little bit, and chat beer with you.
Yeah, yeah.
So speaking of beer, Nick, what are we drinking today? What do you have with us?
So we get a little bit of everything. We get today, right now, we're drinking a little Soldier.
Sure.
It's our amber ale. Yep. It's our flagship, I say beer-flavored beer. Get that nice caramel note, but also just nice and smooth. Like, doesn't have any of the bitterness at the end. It's everything you kind of want a beer to be, and
definitely
everything you don't want the beer to be at the same time. That's a little Soldier. But we have Cherry Mechanic, Papa IPA, Two Stall, and a little bit of hop water, but that's more for a little refresher, I guess.
For sure. Well, I'm excited to have started off with the Little Soldier here. I can still remember when my dad first took me up to Algoma, a little two-car, or the two-stall garage set up there, and this is probably the first beer of yours I had. And then, you know, I'm familiar with the Chair Mechanic, I'm familiar with the two-stall, the hop water, and the Papa IPA are new to me today, so I'm excited to get into these beers.
Cool. Yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah. It's been a fun day, a little wind chill on my face, probably a little more red than I'd like to be, but luckily the podcast, you can't see that, right?
Exactly. This is just purely auditory.
Right.
All right, well, let's get on to today's show. All right, so again, standing here, with Nick Calloway, the owner and brewer at Anapi Brewing Company. Nick, thanks again for joining me on the pod today. I really appreciate you taking the time after the festival. I know it's been a long, long day already, so I really appreciate that. But let's start off simple. How did you get your start with beer? What's been your journey with beer? And, you know, how did you end up, you know, in the position you currently are in?
Sure. Yeah. So a long, long time ago, to me anyway, I'm not that old, but around 16 years old, I started brewing in the garage. And you could buy all the ingredients at that point. You couldn't necessarily brew at that point because 16 years old. But
yep.
It wasn't about the brewing. It was beering. It wasn't about the beer. It was more about the brewing. Working with my hands is just finishing out with a project. So fast forward a little bit. I started at Titletown Brewing Company. I was a little bit of a line cook, a prep cook, busser, more in the front of the house than the back of the house. But I'd bring in my home brews to the brewers, and the brewers would always give me a real, like, good feedback. If they thought it sucked, they told me it sucked, you know, or if
sure.
it was like, I brewed a Helles and I was really excited about it, and they said it was more of a Helles Bock because the, you know, alcohol was a little higher and it was a little more malty or whatever. So really cool to get that feedback and that real honest feedback from people that knew. And so the only job that I didn't do at Titletown was brew beer. ended at the end, left at 2019. I was a general manager at that point, and the restaurant in general kind of was just a bit too much for me. And I wanted to try something different, so I started over at Von Steele Winery. 2009.
Okay.
Did a little assistant winemaking, and then ended up being the general manager there. But kind of the whole time we were talking, I knew Brad and Eric from Von Steele, and they really like beer, even though they own a winery. You know, so we started talking about beer, and they started talking about maybe opening up a brewery.
Okay.
And they knew that I homebrewed. I bring my homebrews in for like employee parties and stuff like that.
Sure.
And so we evolved, I guess, from there to say, you know what, like, let's do this. And my caveat was, if we're going to start a brewery and I'm going to put the time and effort into it, I really have the would like to have the opportunity to purchase it in the future.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So 2013, we started the brewery, we started Anapi, and the deal was that in the future, time TBD, that I could purchase the brewery from them. We started on a 100-gallon direct fire system.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and an old dairy just about, it was about 7 minutes out of town. So Algoma towards Forestville up 42, there's an old dairy building. It was a Carnival Guernsey dairy. Mm-hmm. Pardon my tongue tied. I think it's more cold than beers.
No doubt. I mean, you've been pouring beers more than you've been drinking beers the last few
Most
hours.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. Carnival Guernsey dairy. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the kickoff for Two Stall. Not only were we pouring beers out of a two-stall garage, kind of where I started from brewing, we never brewed in the garage, but it was just two-stall garage tap room if anybody's been there. Really cozy. You walk in the front door, you're immediately met with people. And so you get in there and kind of do that whole thing. So that was two-stall. The reason it's a milk stout, chocolate milk stout, is because we were in the dairy building. Mm-hmm. We were brewing there. And so, yeah, I guess that's the little windy road of starting in the garage and then ending in the garage of just pouring beers there. So,
for sure. And then, so I guess I didn't realize that you actually worked for the winery, and were you on the production side of things as well?
Started out there to basically learn wine.
And
I knew the beer side. I knew the hospitality side. Mm-hmm. So started as an assistant winemaker.
Yep.
I was doing everything from mowing the lawn to, you know, actually helping out with the winemaking on the bottling line and actually making it. But that was a short-lived thing, and I think it was more to grow an appreciation for Von Steel and grow appreciation for wine in general. So.
Okay, definitely. And then I'm sure, too, with, like, the winemaking, a lot of wine is, you know, barrel-aging process and things like that. Has that been kind of... transformed into your beer making as well? Is there some techniques or some ideas and concepts that you borrowed from winemaking that's transferred over to your brewing with beer?
Yeah, most definitely. I see beer as almost a touch more science than art. And I see wine as more art than science. And winemakers, don't beat me up too much, but like the thing about wine is you get dealt with what you get dealt. So you get the grapes from that harvest season, and you have to make the best wine you possibly can make out of that, right?
Totally.
Where in brewing, you have grain that was harvested last year, it was kept underneath ideal situation, it went through the maltsters, like you get a little more protein here, you get a little more moisture there. You might have to deal with some things, but if you're brewing a little soldier, you have your amber ale today, in a year from now, if you're using the same ingredients or similar ingredients, even if it's a different brand, it still was treated with as much care, you know, and the growing season for barley is still left up to nature, but because it's farmed a little bit different, I feel like you have a little bit more consistent product, right?
For sure.
So to your question about barrel-aged beers and, you know, just what we do now is there's a little bit of blending that happens within the winery. You have a wine that turned out pretty good and you're pretty happy with it, but they might add just a little bit of acid to it to make it pop a little bit more.
Okay.
They might add a little sugar to it to make it pop a little bit more and bring out some of these juicy fruit flavors, you know?
Okay.
And so I've embraced that side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot of fun little blends and changes and tweaks, maybe after the beer's done, you know? Like we like it, but it could be a little bit better. And maybe that's not for a Little Soldier, it's not for a Two Stall, it's not for a Papa IPA, and it's not for any of our year rounds, really. But like when you were making a new beer, you've never made it before, you don't know exactly how it's going to turn out, you want it to turn out that way, you get to tweak it and you get to have a little bit of fun with the art side of things.
For sure. I appreciate you speaking to that. I don't think I've had the opportunity on the podcast to have someone that's been involved in, you know, commercial level production of wine and getting to see that side of things and compare that to how they treat their beer. So I really appreciate you speaking to that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then I guess with these beers at hand, right, we'll jump into it a little bit. We're drinking the Little Soldier, the Amber Ale.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that this one, like I said, I think the first time I visited Anapee in Algoma would have been 2015, 2016, thereabouts. And I remember having that beer this time. Has this pretty much been a tried and true, like, starter beer since the early days for you?
Yeah, so this was a homebrew along with Tustall. Hellas homebrew, or Hellas was homebrew, Tustall, Little Soldier, and Oktoberfest were kind of the kickoff beers for us.
Okay.
And they were all homebrews that I brought my recipe back in. It's been tweaked numerous times since the beginning.
No doubt.
But in the past 5 years, probably never been touched. You know, now it's like, it's tried and true. It is what it is. But it's great to have this beer within our portfolio that helps pay the bills, and it helps, you know, pave the way for other cool things. And it's great to see, like, today you have these people that come up and they're just like, I love Little Soldier. I'm going to have that. And instead of coming over and grabbing just like a 2 ounce sample, they don't necessarily say they want a full glass, but like, I know that they do. So then I pour them a full glass, and you know what? They come back like 7 times and they get a full, and they're just so happy to have Little Soldier. And I think that's what this beer is. It's beer flavored beer. It has a good amount of malt, has enough hops to like balance things out. Carbonation's right where it freshens things up, and then the water chemistry brings it home where it's just like crisp. And when you're left with this like this hint of caramel malt that lingers, but it's not enough to like coat your tongue and make it like, this isn't refreshing beer. It's refreshing beer. So this is it's really cool to see where it was, because I can remember how it was, and it was just more malty, and it was a little more caramely, which is a good thing, but it's so much better now. It was just those small little tweaks.
Right, you continue to kind of refine it over time, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the example that I have, the description you just gave is wonderful. What I have in my hand right now, I agree, spot on. It's a really, really fine beer. And the thing I enjoy about Amber Ales is, you know, I'm a Midwestern kid, you know, through and through, and I feel like the Amber Ale is something that the Midwest really, really embraces, and it's a beer we're all very familiar with, and this is a fine example of that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's fun to be in the mix of, you know, you got your Wisconsin Capital Amber. Trying to think of some of the other ones that are around, but that one's so prevalent even here and in Green Bay, and it's Madison, you know, so like it's definitely Wisconsin beer, and Capital's been around for such a long time.
Yes.
They do such a great job. So it's nice to be in that company, that Amber Ale company.
Definitely. So I think this beer, and then we talked about Tustall, you know, that's another one that's been around since the beginning. You know, those beers have been kind of the bill payers, if you will, and they've been around for a long time. How has some of these staples, or, you know, through time have become staple beers, led into some of the other beers that you've made? Like, what kind of direction have you taken from these two examples? I see we're pouring out the Tustall right now.
Yeah, might as well, right?
Right, might as well.
Buzzed with Brian, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's both a noun and a verb.
Right.
But how have these two beers kind of paved the way for you to be able to play around and do things that excite you? Like, what as a brewer, what are you excited about brewing and experimenting with, and, you know, your own little tiny R&D side of the world?
Yeah, that's the most fun for me, and it now is the most fun, I think, for our brewers. I used to brew every drop, design every drop, and, you know, pine over every drop. And now we have a great team of brewers and kind of help along the way, but they do such a great job of doing what they do and keeping things consistent. And the great thing about Little Soldier, the great thing about Tustall is you can brew them. They've been tweaked out so far that we don't need to worry about them anymore. And it allows you to not have to worry about it. And the best part about that is to open up the door and like do other things, right?
Definitely.
So we can have a sour ale that we want to add, you know, pineapple and passion fruit to, and we can learn from what we have learned from with Little Soldier and Tustall, because Tustall's got you know, lactose, and I'm not saying every sour or any sours have lactose, right? But like,
right.
You now know how these these grains and malts react and how the water chemistry reacts. So with some of these year-round beers, we've been able to tweak our off, or one-offs is what we call them, mm-hmm. or seasonal beers, because we have the balance. And a lot of people will be like, hey, if you do a test batch, you know, you're going to have a brand new beer.
Yep.
You're going to do a test batch. You're going to do a 5-gallon batch over in the corner, and you're going to make it and see how things turn out. And it turns out that, you know, a 5-gallon batch takes about as long as a 500-gallon batch to, you know, to brew. You know, it's still a day of getting it all together and da-da-da-da. And it still takes that 2 weeks to ferment if it's an ale. And it still takes a week to chill. So, why?
Sure.
If you went over to a baker and the baker was making muffins, right, and they made great brand muffins, if you asked them to make a blueberry muffin, they probably will knock out one pretty quick,
right? No doubt. Yeah.
It's a muffin. It's beer. I mean, like, so what's going to happen that first time that they make that muffin is, well, you use blueberries, which they don't have in brand muffins, so the muffin might be a little more dense. It might be a little wetter. You know, it may be a little more moist.
Yeah.
Or maybe it doesn't completely set. To the baker, that muffin is still going to be good. Mm-hmm. To the consumer, that muffin might be fantastic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the next time that they make blueberry muffins, they're going to make it better because they made it with blueberries and it got a little moist, you know, like, and now they want it to like set up and they want that muffin top to be a little higher. So they go through all of the same things and now they're going to make a raspberry. The raspberry is going to be better than the blueberry because they've already made the blueberry.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing here is we're making beer. And we're learning from what we did before. We're learning from the past to make the future better. So
that's really well said there. I can appreciate too the, I mean, it's fun to compare food to beer and beer to food and how you like go through the recipe development. I think a lot of people will probably grasp that food recipe and thinking about those processes better and relate that to beer than they would if you just described like a beer recipe to someone that's never brewed beer before. And like, I think everyone has had their hand at baking. But not everyone has had their hand at beer, so it's a really relatable way of, you know, bridging that gap there. So that's great.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
The two stall here that I have, it's a tell on the
me,
nose.
Tell me about it. I tell people about it all day long. Today, literally, I was telling people all about it. I mean, tell me about the two stall. And you'd be kind, obviously.
I've never been slanderous about a beer. Never met a beer I don't like. You know? So this one though, the two stall, it's a feel good beer for me. I love when you take your nose up to it and you just get in the glass. There's a little bit of chocolate. There's a little bit of roast. There's a little bit of, I don't know if it's like a vanillin in there. And, you know, I think that's the lactose probably coming through. It lets you know that you're about to have some, you know, milk sugar or milk fat kind of associated spirit beverage in your hand and in your mouth. And when you take a sip of it, the journey I get is it's just so, like, it's sweet forward, but then the mid palate kind of mellows out and then a little bit of bitterness comes through and it's a little bit of that like cacao, like chocolate bitterness. I mean, there's probably a little bit of hot bitterness laying in there too. I get a little bit of grassiness on the end, but it's not in a bad way. It feels like such a well-rounded product. And this isn't for a stout too. I think a lot of people think, oh God, it's gonna be a heavy, heavy beer. Like I won't be able to drink a lot of that, or I'm not gonna enjoy like a whole 12-ounce pour or 16-ounce pour at the brewery. But this one is so drinkable. And I think that a lot of people will be surprised that they're like, oh, a stout can be that easy to put down. Like this is it for me.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. If you said everything I would have said,
like, okay.
Honestly, spot on, because that's what it that's what it's brewed to be, is that beer that you can have a 16 ounce of it or 12 ounce and you want to have another one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's balanced enough. It's restrained enough. You get that coffee, which there's no coffees in it, but you get that roast, that
exactly.
coffee, mm-hmm. you get that chocolate, but it's like, it's a small little roller coaster in your mouth where it's like highs and lows, and you get that, and then you get the next thing, and you get the next, and then you get the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's all said and done, you're left with not a mouthful of stout.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You're left with this subtle gourmet chocolate, like roasty, maybe a touch of coffee. It's not overly sweet. And again, brings you back to one another one.
Like, yes.
That's, yeah.
Yes. And I think part of wanting another one too is, you know, this is a fairly dry finish too. Like, it has a little bit of a mouth drying effect. It has that, that mouthfeel too on the end of it that kind of, you know, tantalizes you to like, oh, okay, I'm ready for another sip.
Yeah, I want another sip. So there's a little water chemistry that we do with that to like dry it up. Obviously there's lactose in it, but that gets you in the front of the taste. You get in your mouth and you're like, oh, this is gonna be sweet. And as soon as you think this is gonna be sweet, it starts changing on you, and that dryness of the roast and that dryness of the water profile kind of like evens everything out. We went through some lengths with Two Stall and Little Soldier. We, like we said, we used to brew in Algoma, and now we brew in Suamico. So we actually put in a reverse osmosis machine in Suamico, which strips the water in Suamico all the way back to zero. So it takes all the minerals out. And because we had Little Soldier and we had Two Stall that were good sellers, and we wanted to continue to have them taste exactly the same, we strip everything out, and we literally build it back to be well water from Algoma, where we brewed before. Some of the other beers, we end up building it all the way back to be, you know, water from from Munich for our Helles. But a good amount of our beers, we actually build it back to be Algoma water.
Okay.
You know, kind of like source it back. And off of Algoma water, we ended up adding some minerals on top of that. And I think it's something that follows through with Two Stall, just to make it a little bit more drinkable for a stout.
Totally. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think the water chemistry aspect is, you know, you could nerd out all day on that. And that's just so cool that, to me, you know, talk about like, you know, you talk about wine earlier and having like a distinct flavor between grapes and region and, you know, the terroir, if you will. To me, I think beer, the terroir is the water. I mean, right? Like,
definitely
the water is what like perpetuates the yeast to either be really, really happy or maybe not as happy. And you can, you know, you can do so many things to manipulate water as a brewer. And, you know, if you have great regional water and people are like, oh, I know that beer because it tastes that way. The water has such an impactful piece of that flavor profile. It's wild to me.
It is. So what I think of water is it's the intangible that you don't necessarily drink and taste, but it's what brings that whole beer back together.
Yeah.
So like, if a beer is well made, whether it's us or somebody else, a beer is well made and it has all the ingredients and the water isn't quite right, it's still a really great beer, but it maybe like, you're left with a, I don't know about this. Like, you're like, you're searching for what it is, and I don't know that you'll ever know. When you have the water that completes the package, it's the perfect thing.
Like, totally.
It really breathes into it, and it lets you exhale and say, okay, you know what? This is exactly what I was looking for.
For sure. Absolutely. So we talked about, or you just mentioned that, you know, you'd moved brewing production from Algoma to the new Suamico location. I think that'd be a good opportunity, right? We just finished our beer here, Two Stall, and we finished the Little Soldier. Those were beers that were kind of born and bred in the Algoma location. Tell me more about the Suamico. Tell me about the evolution of Anapi over time and how you've moved from that. Well, I mean, obviously both spaces still exist, and there's a new taproom space as well in Algoma. We'll get there in a second, but let's highlight the Suamico space and how that transition looks for you and the Anapi kind of beer history and getting over there and getting started and having a second location.
Yeah, so I would say the new locations are a product of the past. So like I mentioned, 2013 we started up. 2017 I was able to buy the brewery from the winery. So there was leases that were still up, or not up, the leases that were in place when I purchased it. We didn't end up buying any real estate. I don't have any investors. So money was tight, you know, like you just needed to do what you needed to do to do what you needed to do. And so we had a 3-year lease on the brewery, which was just outside of Algoma. And we had a 5-year lease on the tap room, the little two-stall garage.
Yep. Okay.
So that's 2017. Fast forward to 2020, and we needed to have a new brewery, right?
Yep.
So we could have been still in that same brewing space. It was very compartmentalized. It was on multiple levels. There wasn't a whole lot of room for like expansion.
Yep.
We kind of didn't even really bottle. We bottled some stuff there, but the large scale stuff we didn't have a room for. We needed to move.
Sure.
Suamico offered a huge opportunity for us from a freight standpoint. When we got bottles out in Algoma, we were kind of at the mercy of the trucking company, because if they weren't going up to Door County with that other half of the load,
I see. Okay.
We wouldn't get our bottles for sometimes like 3-4 weeks, where we'll get them in a week now. Like, I mean, it's
that's huge.
That big, especially in the summer. So summer versus winter. So now we're ordering in summer. Now they're almost over capacity, and you know, and they're going on these like little kind of ho-dunk little roads, because we're not in like the metropolis of Algoma. We're actually outside of Algoma. So everything from freight down to labor and just having more people around was kind of where we focused on Green Bay. And then Suamico started making more and more sense when we looked at other breweries. And we didn't necessarily want to be in the backyard of another brewery in Green Bay that was already established. Like,
right.
We wanted to be good neighbors, you know,
yep.
and we wanted to be good to the craft beer community. And so Suamico made great sense, because it was just north of Green Bay. There's no other breweries at that point out there. So there was definitely a need. And we had the space, you know, it was a nice, a really nice space. So we built that brewery in 2020. I can remember pulling up March 17th, so coming up on 4 years
yep.
right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the government, well, the state of Wisconsin was closing all bars down on St. Patty's Day, right?
Yeah.
Crazy day to close things down, but yeah. And then even a crazier time, because they want to close down at 7 o'clock, but here nor there. I can remember pulling up to a building that was being built. Not all the walls were up. Concrete was poured, and that's about it. Pulling up in my car and listening to the radio, and the radio was saying that we were closed down and not be able to have anybody go to bars, no restaurants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have tingles down the back of my back right now, honestly, because that was our only source of income, right? Like,
yeah.
We had Taproom in Algoma, and now you're saying that we can't even open up, right? And so I'm in my car looking at this building, huge building, that
definitely.
Like, it's half built. Like, where do you go? What are you doing? At that point, you know, I got out of the car and I walked through the building and realized there's no way to go besides forward. I mean, like, mm-hmm. what do you do? You can't, even if everything goes to complete crap, you can't sell a half-built building, right? So, like, you just keep on pushing forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 2020, and that's Suamico. So I guess that's where and that's how. But we persevered. We opened up in August of 2020,
mm-hmm.
a little bit after. But it's construction, so I wouldn't even blame it on COVID. It's just construction. Things take a little longer to do than you think they're going to do. But
mm-hmm.
we opened up, I'd say soft opening, and it went well. In hindsight, maybe a silver lining. Like, we were able to hone our craft in that building a little bit better
sure.
than we
mm-hmm.
would have if it would have been full out, you know. So so that was Suamico 2020. And then into 22, we closed down the tap room in Algoma, the two-stall garage. The lease was up on that. And we went to two blocks south to a brand new tap room. Kind of a four-stall garage, if you will,
okay.
overlooking mm-hmm. Lake Michigan, and it's beautiful. I mean, two bathrooms instead of one, which is a win for everybody.
Definitely.
A beautiful view. We used to have the view of the Anapee River
yep.
and the Anapee Strait Trail. Now we have a view of Lake Michigan, so just as great. And we have 16 beers on tap. We used to, with a two-stall garage, the cooler was literally so small.
Mm-hmm.
So we struggled to have 9 on tap. And a common question was, why do you have that on tap in Suamico and you don't have it in, you know, in Algoma? So a huge remedy was to be able to move over.
Yep.
So we have 16 beers at both locations, just a great thing. So, yeah, hopefully I didn't get too long-winded on that.
No, that was fantastic. That was fantastic. Thank you. I was hoping maybe you could touch base a little bit more on like what those spaces look like in both locations for folks that maybe haven't had a chance to go out to them. I know the one in Suamico has a little bit of an outdoor patio space for the wonderful summertime and, you know, probably late into the fall as well. And there's plenty of seating inside that space as well. But yeah, if there's anything else you want to highlight about either space that, you know, someone that hasn't been up, by all means.
Yeah, for sure. So the two-stall garage, if you've never been to the original, Von Steele opened it up as a cider bar, so you can still go in there. You can see the maybe the nuts and bolts of it, different color paint and stuff like that, but similar, right? So when you walked in the old one, you walk in, get a couple stools that you probably trip over on the way through.
Sure.
If people were there, you're definitely saying, excuse me. So nice and tight. But once you got in, A-frame on the inside, corrugated metal ceiling. We used curly maple for the bar top and for the trim when we opened up the original. And then the back room had this like kind of weird like greenhouse thing. It was in a garage, but the garage from the prior owner had like an area where they grew plants outside. So not much extra went into that. We put in some tables back there and stuff like that, but it was still nice because you could look over, you had the windows, you could look over the Lenape River. Mm-hmm. So in that main area, orange paint, this burnt orange, which we claimed as our color basically.
Oh yeah.
And then this like very neutral non-stained wood, which is the curly maple. So when we were building the one in Suamico, we really wanted to keep and kind of throw homage to the original. And so with the new one, we still have those unstained bar. We have a corrugated ceiling, stainless steel ceiling or tin ceiling. Mm-hmm. It's not A-frame just because of the way the building was built, whatever, but
like, sure.
It has that metal corrugated thing going on. It has that unstained wood thing going on, and it has this burnt orange walls, which if you haven't been in there, you're like, burnt orange wall, you know, it doesn't sound really cool, but I think it has a really cool vibe to it.
Yeah.
And we stuck with that color the whole time. So when you go into the Suamico, if you were in the old one in Algoma and you walked into the Suamico one, I feel like you feel like you're still in Anapi, right?
Yeah, I would
and
agree. Mm-hmm.
It has that. We try to capture that.
Yeah.
We have TVs, but the TVs have just a rotating menu that, you know, goes through, so you can do that. And that's what we had in Algoma, where we didn't have the TVs that were rotating, but we had cleverly hidden TVs, so when the Packers were playing, we could roll them down, we could have them up. But otherwise, it was really important to us to have people come in and have good conversation.
Yep.
If you have a TV, I think there's so much that you could just zone out on the TV and you don't really talk.
Mm-hmm.
We want to have good conversation and get, you know, somebody talking at this side of the bar, talking this side of the bar, and everybody's having a good time. And that's part of craft beer as well, is you can walk into a craft brewery, even if it's, you know, across the country, across the state, wherever. You walk in and you already have something probably in common with the person that's sitting next to you.
Definitely.
Because
mm-hmm.
it's craft beer, and you're
right
there, you know. Like, you might like IPAs, and I like stouts, but we still like craft beer.
Totally.
And there's something to be had there. So taking away the TVs has been a nice thing. So the people that ask, you know, about this and that. And we'll have, you know, sports on here and there, but that was a commonality of the old one to the new one. And then when we built the brand new one in Algoma, I would say it's a marriage of the very first one and a Suamico, where we have more of that A-frame, still corrugated ceiling, still the neutral bar, still
burnt orange backsplash.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I feel like if you go into one, you know you're at Anapi. If you go to the other one, you know you're at Anapi. So
that's great. I think that's important for like brand recognition, and you know, as you as a consumer. Half the battle is you go there for the beer, but you go for the ambiance too, and keeping the ambiance very similar and very familiar feeling. I think that's important. And I like that you helped. Yeah, you kept that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So I think we've covered, you know, kind of where Anapi's been and where they are currently. You know, I think we were just at the festival today, and Badger State at their tent had the 10th anniversary beer that you rolled out, kind of collaboration with Still Mank, Badger State, and yourself. Tell us about that beer and kind of what that's meant for you and being a part of the great craft beer community here in the Green Bay and the Green Bay greater area. You know, outside looking in, I feel like it's always been such a high collaborative group of brewers. I mean, what's that been like, and how cool was that to brew a 10th anniversary beer with two other breweries that, you know, you've been towing side by side with all these years?
Yeah, it's fantastic. We're actually doing the podcast here, right?
Right.
We're in the hallway of Badger State, and if you're from this area, when Badger State had opened up in 2013, you'd walk through these two doors, and you'd walk up, and their brewery was right off to your left-hand side, mm-hmm. and you grab growlers to go here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And this is, like, again, 2013, right? And this, we're right next to, and we were just recently in their pilot batch now, but, like, it's here, and it gives me, again, a little bit of goosebumps, which I'm not usually a goosebump kind of guy, but
sure.
So 2013, you walk in, you get like a table, you pick up some beers here and stuff like that. So while they were doing this in 2013, we were doing that, and we opened up in June. I'm not sure what month they exactly opened up, but we were growing together at that exact moment, which kind of comes into, you know, focus a little bit farther in the future. But I can remember stopping here and trying their beers, being very, very excited about it. Still make at that point. They started out with a little different plan. You know, we were brewing in one location. We were serving our beer out of a two-stall garage.
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
The licensing is the same for everybody. But we were utilizing a brewing location and not having a tap room. And we were having our second location, which is able to be had, and we were having our tap room there. Badger State necessarily didn't even have a tap room. Like, you come over here, you could pick
mm-hmm.
up beer, right?
Sure, just to go. Kind
just
of,
to
yeah.
go, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't even have it here. And then you had Stillmake, who was at that point and maybe a little bit before, so they were actually before us. They're doing contract brewing, beer out to way more people than either one of us probably combined. I don't know the numbers or anything like that, but... And they didn't have a tap room. So, like,
right.
we're all coming from at it from different angles at the exact same time. It's just really
yeah.
cool to see that in 10 years, three different, totally different ways of doing things, and we mm-hmm. end up kind of in the same area, right?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So we've met through the years, Andrew, Brad and I, and Sam, and obviously Michael and whatnot. We've met in different ways and ended up just becoming friends. Like, there's a commonality. Obviously, we own breweries, but at the same time, and at that point, I didn't own breweries. Like, so, just owned, or didn't even own anything, right?
just an idea,
right? it's cool to kind of come together and do it all. Mm-hmm. And so, 10 years. Brad, again, a little bit before us. His brick and mortar came a little bit after us. I think his anniversary is coming up in a couple months, physical anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
We did it in June. Badger, I think, it was in December. So, like, really cool. 10 years down the road, we're all here. We're all pushing it together. I won't say it happens all the time, because all of us kind of, you know, plan ahead and whatnot. But,
right.
hey, we're short on whatever. Crystal Malt 20. You know,
sure.
do you have any?
Mm-hmm.
And there's never a time that if somebody had it, they're not going to give it to you, you know,
right.
and like everybody's just so friendly and helpful and everything that, and in no other industry that I know of, would you be that helpful? You know, you kind of would mm-hmm. be like a cute, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, well, if you don't have that, well, good luck.
Tough.
You
yeah,
know?
Good luck. Exactly. Yeah.
So, it's really cool to be able to come together and brew this beer. To be able to have a collaboration where we're all, like, there was no feuding. It was like, oh, what do you want to do for a beer? Brad mentions a Baltic Porter. Okay, let's do that. Sounds good. You know, it's not like, well, no, that's a horrible idea. We know, whatever. And then Andrew's like, oh, I really want to try some macadamia nuts, but they have to be toasted. Okay, we're going to do toasted macadamia nuts.
Right.
So that sounds
Done.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we could do a macadamia Baltic Porter. Okay, well, should we do anything else? Well, there's three of us. Like, maybe we do a triple delight, you know, kind of kicking back and forth.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like, chocolate sounds good, you know. And, oh, well, what about those twist cones? You know, we could have, like, nuts on the top, and we have a chocolate and vanilla. Vanilla, like, okay, sounds good. Like, we're on the same page, even though we're totally different than each other. You know,
Definitely.
We're all there. And it's not like we hang out every day, you know, like we'll see each other a couple times a year, basically. But like, mm-hmm. at the same time, this meeting went like really, really quick, and it all came together, and it sounded like a great idea. Badger State ended up brewing the beer. We all came over. We helped them out on brew day. They kept us in the loop kind of the whole way along, and suddenly we have this decade delight beer. Baltic Porter, 7.5%. You get the chocolate, you get the nuts, you get the vanilla, you get everything in there. It's just cool to be on the same page, you know, like we were
absolutely
on the same page then. We are now, so yeah.
So, I mean, I guess what's next then, right? Like, if that's the 10-year ante for the three of you, and that's a big big achievement, big, you know, milestone to hit for this brewery, what's next for you? What's down the pipeline?
Yeah, that's a
big question, right?
Yeah. It is. So we have, mind if I open another beer?
Go ahead. Yeah, let's open another beer. Yeah.
Let's do Papa, a little something different.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Finish her out as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So next up for us, cheers.
Cheers, yeah.
Next up for us, so we've been brewing on the same system for many years.
Mm-hmm.
We started out with that 100-gallon direct fire, like as big as your local church would do booyah kind of thing, you know, right?
Yeah.
And we moved away from that to a steam-fired 15-barrel system. And that 15-barrel system, quote-unquote, is a industrial tank that was repurposed to be a brew kettle.
Okay.
And a dairy tank that is not heated, just insulated, for a mash tun.
Okay.
And the guys that pour their heart and soul into brewing it now. Like I said, I started it and now they're doing it. They hand stir every batch every day.
Wow.
They shovel it out because there's no automation whatsoever.
Right.
So they shovel it out. So we're talking 1,000 to 1,200 pounds of raw grain.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it's saturated with water, you're probably talking, you know, 1,800, 2,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, every day, in and out, everything's super manual. There's no buttons and there's no beep, beep, beep. You know, like it's flipping levers and working with pumps and really getting to know the ingredients, which I think is part of that art that new brewers, or just, I won't even say new brewers, but just brewers that work on systems that are very, very automated, you never got the chance to stir that mash tun, which maybe is probably a good thing now that I'm saying it, right? But like when you stir that mash tun, you know whether there's a dough ball in there or not because you can feel it. Like you feel the nuance of the malt, you feel the nuance of the mash, and you know whether it's a little too thick or a little too thin.
Sure.
Where you're kind of going off of sight when you're doing it the other way. But I can't wait to not have to do that. And I would imagine that the guys at the brewery at this point, you know, they're looking forward to not having to do that. I think there's going to be some consistency to it. So our next big expenditure would be like a new system, an actual system.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. A brewing system. And efficiencies will go up, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So I think there's a little bit of fear in me of are the beers going to taste the same, you know, once you have that new system in place? And I can guarantee you they will, but how many batches will have to go down the drain before that? You know, like,
yeah,
I want to make sure that everything's dialed in, you know,
yep.
So you can have a little soldier today and then have one on the brand new system and say, you know what, this tastes exactly like the little soldier I know and love. And that's one of the most important things to me. So,
yeah.
But that's the next one. Yeah. New buildings. I won't say I'm done with them.
Okay.
But,
done for now.
Done for now. Yeah. It seemed like the past 5 years, 6 years, whatever it's been since 2017, it was planning a building, building a building, trying to get that building up and running, planning a brand new building, building another new building, and then
just
redoing
it right into the next. Yeah.
Imagine, you know, owning three houses, I guess, is kind of the thing, you know, where...
Sounds like a nightmare.
Always something to do. Yeah, right? So, looking forward to this summer, honestly, of normalcy. Like, mm-hmm. this is how normal brewers kind of do things, you know, and like,
definitely.
All right, we're just going to keep the wheels on the bus and keep on going down the road as opposed to trying to create new buses and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to that, but I am looking forward to some efficiencies and making things easier and safer and all the way around. So
definitely. That's awesome. And speaking of summer, I think this is a great opportunity to, you know, Buzz with Brian fans, people listening to the pod. If you're heading up to the, you know, northern parts of Wisconsin, whether you're on the Lake Michigan side, heading up towards Door County, or if you're heading north of Green Bay into the Northwoods there in the UP, I think both locations for Anapi are great stop-ins to, you know, quench your thirst and stop, you know, check it out. And it's a nice little stop halfway between. It's a gateway between here and either Door County or the Northwoods on the eastern
really
side of the state. So check it out.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's awesome.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of tourism that comes up, you know, Milwaukee, if you're coming up 42 and you're going to hit, you know, the lakeshore, you take the scenic drive. You hit that lakeshore and you can stop in Algoma. Algoma's got a lot of great things. You have to go through Sturgeon Bay because you're going to pinch through there anyway.
Yep.
If you're coming from the western side of the state, you're to come through Green Bay. It's just a short jaunt north to Suamico, so you can definitely hit it that way. And then if you're going up to Marinette or, you know, the Youp, you can definitely hit it. We're right off of 141.
Yeah, couldn't
41.
Be easier.
Yeah, so works out good. So
definitely. I guess before we close this episode out, you know, you just poured this beer. Let's talk a little bit about the Papa IPA. This is a newer one, you said, correct?
Yeah, so it's a brand new year-round for us.
Mm-hmm.
We started out the brewery. We had a year-round IPA called Noble IPA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all German malt, all German hops. And it was a diversion from the reason we created it. It was a diversion from, at that point, the citrusy kind of hops that were out there, and everybody was doing kind of the same, you know, like it was
right a little bit of a plug and play formula, if you will. Like Mosaic, Citra, throw it in there, done.
Now we're into this whole new world of hazies, which are great, you know. And then there's so many different IPAs that you can go down a different path, you know, every time you have one. We've been looking for just an IPA. You know, like when you go to a bar, you just want it, like, I just want an IPA sometimes, you know, like you don't want the new hazy, you just want an IPA. And that's why we created this. So this is Papa. We call it our old school IPA. Even though it's not all that old school, but, you know, you throw it back to the...
Relatively speaking,
2000s, you know, if you just want like a good IPA that has malt character, which some lack now, right? Which it's all style, which is fine. But there's malt character in here. It's not overly caramely, but it's got this like nice, like toasty, biscuity kind of malt thing going on.
Definitely.
But at the same time, you finish up with a nice bitterness, like a bracing bitterness. It's not a harsh bitterness, but a bracing bitterness. And then in the aroma, you still have a really nice tropical to citrus kind of hit. So it's got a touch of new school. We use Talus and some Strata, but then we still use some of the old school hops in there as well. So you get this nice crossover. They all play well together. So you get a really nice hop from aroma all the way to the finish. But within there, there's a nice malt. And I think the best thing for me is I like to drink beer. and this is a 5.5% beer. So you can have a couple of them and be good. You know, sometimes you get into that like bigger beer at 7%, 7-8%, and you have one or two, and I won't say you're down for the count, but like you maybe aren't grabbing for another one at that point. Or this one is something that you could, you know, have, you know, while you're cooking a steak out on the grill, and then, you know, you walk into the next situation, you could still have it. It checks all the boxes for an IPA, but it also has that drinkability, and it also has that malt kind of chewy side. So that's kind of what we're shooting for, and it's nice to have year-round back, because a lot of people come into the tap room and, you know, what is your IPA? And prior to this, we always had rotating series, and we still have that. But it's nice to have your IPA and be able to answer that question.
So. Yes, definitely. Nick, I don't think I have anything to add to that. That was a perfect spot on description of what I've been experiencing the last couple of minutes, just taking sips of this beer. And I definitely see kind of the frame of mind from the customer's standpoint and how you're selling it from behind the counter. And the other, you know, people come in, what are they expecting? Like, yeah, that is it. So definitely great beer. Great beer.
Appreciate that.
Of course. But I think that'll just do it for us here. Let's wrap up the episode. Sound good?
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, beer fans, that wraps up today's episode. Thanks for tuning in this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Nick, thank you so much for joining me on the mic. I had an absolute pleasure speaking with you and enjoying these beers together.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. I appreciate you inviting me. And I was sort of hesitant after a beer festival. You never know how it's going to go. You get a lot of talking and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But this was perfect. And thanks to Badger State for letting us take over a little back corner back here. So
definitely, this has worked out really well. And thanks. I'll give another plug to the Pour Another Round guys, Jonathan, Derek, Cameron, for throwing on the festival today, kind of coordinating this event and being able to have our paths kind of intertwined for the day. So shout out to them as well. One last question for you I always ask here is, where can people find these beers? I know we talked about in the last section that, you know, if you're heading up towards the northern part of the state, whether it's Door County, UP, northern Wisconsin, Anapi's an easy place to stop over, and you know, that's the best place to find these beers. But where else might people find these beers out in the wild?
Yeah, so out in the wild, we keep it close to the chest. Mm-hmm. We are northeast Wisconsin, so if you're in Brown County, Kewaunee County, Door County, and then up the lakeshore, you're going to be able to find us down south. It gets a little bit more sparse. You can still find us down through Fond du Lac County and Sheboygan County, but you're going to find Little Soldier. You're going to find Two Stall. You might not find one-offs. You might find Little Soldier, or I'm sorry, Chair Mechanic. We do a little bit of self-distro down in Milwaukee area, so Discount Liquors, Ray's Wine over in Waukesha.
Nice. Yep.
Wauwatosa. Apologize for that. But so Discount, Raise, stuff like that.
Yep.
They do a really great job of helping us and promoting us, but pretty sparse down there. We do, like I said, self-distro. So,
yep.
But northeast Wisconsin, if you're in Green Bay, around Green Bay, you should be able to find us at, you know, your local places like Woodman's, Ridgeview or Wine Cellar, but you also find us at the bigger places like Woodman's, Festival Food and stuff like that. So, yeah, stop by the tap rooms, check us out close to Green Bay, northeast Wisconsin in general.
Awesome. Yeah, well said. Lots of opportunities out there to find these beers, and the best place to find these beers and have, you know, the whole profile, 16 taps, both locations. Check out the tap rooms themselves. I think that's the best place.
For sure. A lot of one-offs at the tap rooms, so if you're looking for a Little Soldier, stop by, grab a Little Soldier, but then try the six other new beers that we have on tap, you know, that week. So,
exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Well, thank you again, Nick, and that'll do it all for us here today. There'll be a post about this episode, like I do with all my episodes, on the social media at Buzz with Brian. Instagram, very active. If you want to reach me, feel free to hit me with a DM on there. Otherwise, you can send me an email at buzzwithbrian@gmail.com. Until then, I can't wait to get on the mic again and join another couple beers. Nick,
cheers.
Cheers. Yeah.